270. Well, that's one of the ones that got me, too. Let's take another look at 270. And let's look at it in this sense. As we look at this verse, 270, let's look at it as we'll take this verse as an application. We'll apply it in our daily life. And let's look at the aspects of this verse. We can even break it down. We'll read the purport and we'll discuss it. But we'll think about how we're here now. We're going to hear the verse and we'll talk about how we intend to apply it in our life, starting with today. And let's see where we go with that. So I'll sing out the Sanskrit and everyone can repeat. But when you repeat it, do it from deep within yourself and do it with gusto, so that if there's any devotees standing outside and also the devotees in the kitchen, they hear it, they'll be attracted. Apuryamanam machala pratishtam. Samudrama pa pravishanti yadvat. Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve.
Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve.
Sashantam apnoti na kama kami.
Sashantam apnoti na kama kami.
Apuryamanam machala pratishtam. Samudramapa pravishanti yadvat.
Samudramapa pravishanti yadvat.
Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve.
Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve.
Sashantam apnoti na kama kami.
Sashantam apnoti na kama kami.
Apuryamanam machala pratishtam.
Apuryamanam machala pratishtam.
Samudramapa pravishanti yadvat. Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve.
Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve.
Sashantam apnoti na kama kami.
Sashantam apnoti na kama kami.
Apuryamanam.
Apuryamanam.
Always being filled.
Always being filled.
Achala pratishtam.
Achala pratishtam.
Steadily situated. So, what does apuryamanam mean?
Okay. Always thinking of Lord.
Always being filled. And achala pratishtam?
Steadily situated.
Steadily situated. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam. So, apuryamanam means always being filled, and achala pratishtam means?
Steadily situated.
Okay. Samudram.
Samudram.
The ocean. Apa,
water.
Pravishanti,
enter.
Yadvat,
as.
Because the words samudram means apa, water. Pravishanti, yadvat. Okay, so it's a. There's a comparison. Krishna's making a comparison now, right? So the first half of the verse is about how the ocean is always being filled up with water, right? It's being constantly filled with water. Apuryamana means? Achala pratishtam. Samudram? Apa? Samudramapa pravishanti yadvat. Okay, so someone say, don't look, but say it back, what the word is and what it means. Is that too hard, or should I say what the word is and then you say what it means? Okay, I'll say the word, and then but don't look. And we'll just, does anyone want to volunteer to try this? Yes. What do the waters do when, in relationship to the ocean? All other waters enters into. Yes, okay. And for, let's start passing the microphones around too, so when we participate, you can hear. Who else wants to try? Yes.
Apuryamanam, always being filled. Achala Pradishtam, steadily situated. Samudram, ocean. Apaha, water. Pravishanti, enters. Tavat, as.
Yavat. Good. It's a Yavat Tavat verse. There's a lot of Yavat Tavat verses just like this. It's like that. This is like that. Anybody else want to give it a try? We'd ask somebody to try to make a mistake, though, please.
Apuryamanam, steadily situated, achala pratisthani.
We asked them to make a mistake now. Apuryamanam.
Oh, always been filled.
Yes.
Achala pratisthani, steadily situated.
Yes.
Samudram, ocean, apaha, water, pratisthani, enters, yadvat, as.
Okay. Pravishanti. Pravishanti enters into. Thank you very much. So just take a minute. All of you have been to the ocean before? Which ocean have you seen? How many oceans? Your name? Yes?
Oh, Rahul.
Ravi?
Rahul.
Rahul.
Rahul. Rahul, welcome. Nice to see you. Which oceans have you seen in the world? Tell us how many oceans you've seen.
Two.
Which ones?
The Indian Ocean and the Pacific.
Pacific.
Yeah.
Never been to the East Coast of America?
Yes, but I haven't gone to the ocean.
Okay. You didn't see it from the plane?
Maybe I have.
Okay. All right. Well, at least two oceans you saw. Who else has seen other oceans? Yes?
Atlantic Ocean.
Here, pass it up.
The Atlantic Ocean on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one on this side?
Pacific.
Pacific. Well, I've seen the Pacific. We have that in
Atlantic,
Australia.
Atlantic Pacific. Too. Okay, you got the ones covering around America so far. Any others?
Indian Ocean, yeah.
Indian Ocean?
Yeah.
Australia doesn't have any oceans?
Yeah, we have the Pacific.
It's just the same old Pacific?
The other side of it. Yeah.
Really?
Isn't the other side the Indian Ocean? West Coast? Okay.
Okay. What else? Sri Govinda, you've seen?
Pacific Ocean, Indian Ocean, Atlantic Ocean, on the flat. In fact, all oceans merge into one.
They all merge into one.
Yes.
It's actually one big ocean. And all the rivers enter into there, right? So when you take Shnan in the ocean, you actually get benefit from taking bath in the holy waters, right? Because Ganges entering and all the holy rivers are entering in the ocean. It's a fact. It's auspicious to take bath in the ocean. And Krishna says, of bodies of water, I am the?
Ocean.
Which in Sanskrit is?
Samudra.
Everyone say together?
Samudra.
Samudram. And what is the characteristic of Samudram in Sanskrit? Apuryamanam achala pratishtam. Yeah. And it's true. The ocean is given as an example in 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Avaduta Brahman. He had 24 gurus, and one of them was the ocean. And one of the characteristics of the ocean was that it didn't become changed. No matter what was entering in or going out, it didn't change. Stayed the same. And so this is one of the characteristics of the ocean that's being mentioned here. This is a nice thing to remember because the ocean is fascinating. We can go to the ocean and look at it, see it, and then remember this verse. And this is, it can become one of our instructing gurus, the ocean. And Krishna is putting forward the ocean as one of our instructing gurus here in this verse. Okay, the next part is the tavat part. We've done the yavat part, now the tavat. Tavat. So. Kama. Desires. Yam, unto whom? Pravishanti, enter. Sarve, all. Saha, that person. Shantim, peace. Apnoti. Achieves. Na. Not. Kamakami. One who desires to fulfill desires. One who desires to fulfill desires. What is somebody who desires to fulfill desires? A kamakami? So my name is Kamakami Das. Na kamakami das, right? Because that's what he says in this verse. Na kamakami. He says, don't be a kamakami. A kamakami means one who desires to fulfill desires. So he says, na kamakami. And there's a couple of free spaces on this one. What are the words we all know? What's one of them? Shanti. Shanti everyone knows. So this verse, he's telling how to get shanti, how we can achieve shanti. What's another word that everybody knows here? Sarve, kama. Everyone knows kama means desire, right? And sarve, all. So this one's fairly simple. And again, it's a yavat tavat verse. So tavat means so. Kama means yum. That's referring to unto whom. So it's talking about the person. Pravishanti, another free space. We already did it in the top part. Pravishanti means? Yeah, so this is the comparison. The person is being compared to an ocean. Your mind or your heart, it's like that ocean. And instead of water entering in, like it does, you know, waters pour down, especially in the monsoon. They come rushing down the hills and nothing can stop them. Even you dam it up, they still have to let some of it go. And over time, those dams break down and the water always makes it to the sea, doesn't it? And they're coming from every different direction, different rivers and rivulets. And so what about the person now? It's being described, being compared to the ocean, but what's entering into the person? Desires coming in all the time. They never stop, do they? They're constantly coming in from every direction. Big rivers, little rivers, every little side it comes in, all these desires, right? Okay, so tavat kama yam pravishanti sarve. Sarve again means all. Sa, that person, shantam. And here's the word apnoti, which means achieves. So it means this is one of the words that indicates where we can make some progress in spiritual life. We want to achieve something higher. We want to achieve some status in spiritual life, some standing. So you can achieve this, Krishna's telling how in this verse. So the translation, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. May I read that again? Hare Krishna. May I? As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna-conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires even up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruit of workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. But the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace. Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmanitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Now let's analyze in such a way that we all have something to take with us. That means you get some thing to grab onto from this verse and purport that you can actually use. You'll keep it in your pocket. You can bring it out tomorrow morning and polish it up a little bit and look at it and think, now I have something. I have a way to live in the world I'll be more peaceful. That's important too. Why is it important to be peaceful, first of all? From this chapter, why is it important to be peaceful? Does Krishna pose this idea about peace earlier in this chapter? Yes. Use the mic, please.
Krishna says, without peace, there cannot be any happiness. And without being peaceful and happy, there's no question of Krishna consciousness.
Okay. Where does he say that?
266, I believe.
Correct. Page 139. One who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there's no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So what are the two things he says that you can't have unless you're connected with the Supreme?
Transcendental intelligence.
Transcendental intelligence. And?
Steady mind.
A steady mind. Transcendental intelligence and a steady mind. Can somebody say, Hariharan Prabhu can say a little bit what one of those means. Pick one. What is steady intelligence or peaceful mind mean? Or steady mind. Give us some idea.
So steady mind means like one who is not affected by distress or happiness. One who is always calm and knows what to do in any situation.
Is that possible to attain?
It's difficult.
But possible? Give us a little hope.
It's not impossible.
Huh?
Maybe difficult, but it's not impossible.
Difficult, but not impossible.
It is possible.
Haribol. Not impossible. Okay, through practice and detachment. Okay, very good. So we get this, we get a transcendental intelligence and a steady mind by being connected with Krishna, the Supreme Krishna Consciousness. And without those two things, what's it impossible to get? Krishna says. No peace. What's the opposite of having a transcendental intelligence or a steady mind? Huh? Okay, so pass the microphone up. He's going to explain what a material intelligence is and an unsteady mind. Give us a description.
I'm just thinking about the time, this body, and things related to the body is mine. Like, and trying to protect and enjoy those, control and enjoy.
What's wrong with that? That's natural.
That's not natural. I mean, we are not the control enjoyer.
But I have to worry about these things because, after all, I have my body, I have my family.
But that's
I got to make a living.
That's
I have to take care of my car.
That's not we who we are. That's step.
Hey, in. You may say that, but I still got to feed my kids tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, we have to live in this.
So
world.
You're telling I have to give these things up? I can't.
No, no, it's not a matter of giving. We have to understand the true relationship. These are material, and this doesn't belong to us. This belongs to the Supreme Lord. They are given to us for some time, so that we can use them in the Supreme Lord service.
So I can use them.
You can, yeah, we can use them in a proper way.
And what about this intelligence, material intelligence?
Material intelligence means trying to enjoy thinking that this belongs to us, and that is not correct because this really doesn't belong to us. Because like if the person owns some land, before the person was born, the land was there, and person when is dead, the land is still there. In some interim period, the person is claiming that it's my land. So that notion is false. So in the transcendental intelligence, person will understand that this actually is given by the God to me so that I can do some service to the Supreme Lord using these material assets.
Okay. So it sounds like we keep our intelligence, we keep our mind, we just change our perspective. Is that right?
So
when we become perfect in Krishna consciousness, we still have a mind, right? We still have an intelligence. It's just using them differently. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So we keep our mind, we keep our intelligence. It's just they become purified. Transcendental. They become transcendental and steady. So we can get a steady mind, we can get transcendental intelligence. Then we can have peace. And Krishna asked the questions here. The question here, Ashantasya kuta sukham. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So, in this verse that we're reading in text number 70, we're looking for the places where we can apply this in our life. From the verse, from this metaphor Krishna's giving, or from the simile Krishna's giving, or from the purport itself, some of the suggestions there. What things are you planning to use in your Krishna consciousness? What will you apply from this verse? Rupa's got some things.
Well, Krishna's saying if we try and strive to satisfy our material desires, then we can't be peaceful and happy. But if we don't try and strive those material desires, and we just act to please Krishna without expecting anything in return, to please Krishna, to love Krishna, then automatically we'll become peaceful and happy. Like Krishna says in the fifth chapter, that one who knows me is the ultimate goal of all austerities and penances, and the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods and the friend of all living entities, he alone can achieve real peace. So we don't, if we just satisfy to serve and love Krishna and realize that he's the Lord of everything and he's the friend of everyone, then we can achieve, that peace will come automatically. But if we try and satisfy our material desires, you'll never be peaceful. It'll always be an anxiety because they're never fulfilled.
Okay, but it's very philosophical what you're saying. Can I get something more practical that I can take home? It's good, but bring it down. Yes, Gandharvika. Give me something I can put in my pocket.
Not the answer for what you're saying, Prabhuji. Before I take away something, I wanted to know more about what peace means, because even though we chant and so many things, we don't see that it's like what actual peace means. Is it like you're always happy means? What is that happiness? Because even in Krishna consciousness, we see that people are like in anxiety, and even in Vrindavan, Yashoda, and all those people who are close to Krishna, it doesn't seem like the peace that how we interpret peace as. So I want to know what is the peace and happiness that Krishna mentions here, so that we can aspire for the right thing.
Oh, this is good territory. Good, very interesting, because he's bringing up this point. What does it mean to actually be peaceful? And that Yashoda is always in anxiety, chasing after Krishna. Are you going to get into the cow pen again? Are there snakes? Are there monkeys? There's so many things around Vrindavan. So he's not peaceful. So what does it mean? What does that kind of peacefulness mean in Krishna consciousness? What's being said in the verse about peacefulness?
One who has lost all inclinations.
What's that?
One who has lost all inclinations.
Lost all inclinations? For material sense gratification. Okay. Give him the mic, he can read that over again. We need tech support. Where's the other microphone? Is it two? Unable to locate.
One who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present, because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace.
So what part are you bringing out? Okay, Gandharvika Mataji was saying that there's a way in which sometimes people think of peace as sitting on a mountaintop without a care in the world, something like that. There might be an image of a yogi sitting, shanti, 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 you know, no disturbance. But in Vraj, in our idea of the perfected devotees, they have a lot of anxiety. Try turning it on now.
That anxiety what Yashoda Mai has, or Radharani has, or you know, all the gopis have, they have totally a pure love, devotion towards Krishna. That anxiety is for Krishna. Our anxiety, that is a transcendental anxiety.
Okay, well, we know that now, but how does that make it different? You say you have an anxiety for your car, for your kids, for their education, for what might happen to your job. And then you're saying that Yashoda and everyone else has anxiety for their service. And devotees, they have anxiety. We have anxiety when we put on the monthly Sankirtan festival. We're in anxiety, right? What are we in anxiety about? Tell us some things. What puts you in anxiety about the monthly Sankirtan
achieving
festival?
Achieving the goals.
Okay,
life.
Achieving the goals. What else? What? Who's going to do the cover all the jobs, right? What else? Who's going to make prasadam? Who's going to cook the prasadam? Yeah, there's some anxiety there, right? Did it get covered? Did this?
But know? There is a lot of bliss in that anxiety when you are, you know, doing this kind of. This is a transcendental anxiety. You feel a different bliss. But the anxiety is what we develop in the material world through, you know, trying to pay the bills and working. You're all the time in totally a confused state of mind. our achievement there does not satisfy, you know, it's all so temporary. But when we are, you know, trying to achieve something in relation to Krishna consciousness, however, you know, the anxiety could be, but still there we feel at the corner of our heart something very nice coming out, you know, we want to do more. But that does not happen in the material world. You know, we know very well our boss is going to kick us out, even though we try to please him. That fear is always there. But here, we don't have that fear. We have love growing in our hearts. This is what I feel.
Okay. Anything else about that? Spiritual anxiety? Shri Govinda.
The anxiety that Mother Yashoda has and gopis have, that bring, that is like separation, but in the separation, they have remembrance of, like, Krishna is present in that anxiety. So they're taking association in that. When we are like feeling separation from material things, we are basically, it's just miseries. It's just, there is no happiness in that. At the same point. But.
Yes, you're going to say, Krishna Rupa.
I just have the question too, before I can understand all this, and is that I can't fully understand what desires are, because how do you define what a desire is? And it kind of relates a little bit to what we're talking about, transcendental anxiety, because at what point does something become not something for Krishna and it becomes something material for me? Like, for example, at the moment, for a week, I've been wanting a new suitcase. Now, is this a material thing or a spiritual thing? Because it's very useful, because at the moment we've got too many bags and it's not practical and we're getting on planes and it's a big headache. So it seems to me that this is actually a very practical thing that can actually help us in what we're doing. So is that then a material desire, or at what point is it material, or is there some element of it that it's practical and therefore should be done, and therefore Krishna will be satisfied because we're executing, he does tell us to execute our material and spiritual things in a proper way. So how do we really say something is a material desire? Do you understand my sort of question?
Yes, I understand your question. There's a definition, very simple, nice definition that we can look to in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Atmendriya priti, vancha, tari bhali kam, krishnendriya priti, icha, dhari prem nam. So this gives the definition of the difference between a material desire and a spiritual desire. And the first one is called the indriya priti. Atmendriya priti means that I want to satisfy my senses for the pleasure of my own senses. This, he says, this vancha, this desire, is called lust. And when that's called Krishnendriya priti, when I want to serve Krishna's senses, then that's called prema. That's called love. So the difference is, when it's for me, then it's lust. When it's for Krishna, then it's called love, prema. And the author says that they appear very similar, but actually they're as different as iron and gold. So in the case you're asking about, when we're using things in Krishna's service, then of course, the definition comes from Rupa Goswami, anasaktasya vishanya tarham upayunjita nirbande Krishna sambandha yuktam vairagyamuchite. That when we have material, so-called material things, but we use them in Krishna's service for his pleasure, then those things become dovetailed and they become transcendentalized. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmano hutam brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhinam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he gives the example of when you're doing a fire yajna, you're performing a homa, and the shruk and the shrava that you're using to perform the yajna, those spoons, and everything around, all the paraphernalia that you're using, as you're making oblations into the fire, all those things become Brahman. Why? Because they're being used in the service of Brahman. So they also become transcendentalized. And It's just like when you take an iron rod. It's made of iron. But when you put it in the fire, the very, very hot fire, then it becomes hot, hotter, hottest, and it turns from iron into fire. Have you ever seen that at a blacksmith's place? It's amazing, actually. When it gets hot enough, the iron bar actually turns into fire itself. You see it. It's glowing. It's got flames coming from it. And it's the same as fire. So because of its proximity to the fire, it becomes fire itself. So if you're using these articles in Krishna's service, according to the Bhagavad Gita, then they become transcendentalized. And if your intention is to use them in order to perform Krishna's service, then they also become transcendentalized. So making a distinction in our lives about how to use things for Krishna's service, we can discern what's a material desire and what's a spiritual desire by seeing which is to satisfy my own senses and which are to satisfy Krishna's. Now, there's a practical matter too, because we require some kind of sense gratification as well to live. I mean, it's not that we can do without it, but sense gratification, Prabhupada used to say, is like salt. You don't want to use too much and you don't want to use too little. Or it's kind of like when you trim your fingernails also, you don't want to go too short or you're going to be in a lot of pain, but you also don't want to leave them long. It requires some balance. And Krishna mentions also to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, I think we have a future kirtan leader out there, that when you're taming a horse, you have to know how to give it a little bit of rope and then bring it in. Not always bringing in, but also there's a way that you tame the horse by letting out a little bit, then bringing it in at the right time. So there's a balance in our life too. That's why there's a system of varnas and ashrams, this system of brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. It's a gradual process so that one, according to one's nature, can balance one's need for a particular kind of sense gratification and situation in the world to remain in Krishna's service. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that in the course of doing your service, for instance, sleeping is a kind of sense gratification, isn't it? No? Hansapriya doesn't like it. Devotees don't like to sleep so much because they want to do service all the time, but the senses like it. Because they get tired and they get bored after a while. When the sun goes down, that means Krishna's left the universe for a little while, or our vision, and they get morose and they want to go to sleep. We get tired, fatigued. And so for the senses to lie down and go to sleep, it's a kind of gratification. But the devotees are lying down and go to sleep for a certain amount of time with this idea that I wish I could keep doing service, but I'm a little tired. And if I keep driving the van, you know, I might drive the devotees off the road. So I should, for the service of Krishna and to the service of the devotees, I'm going to take rest. Right? I mean, there's this rule now in most traveling Sankirtan parties that the driver gets to take a lot of extra rest, because we've had so many accidents. People like say, well, I won't sleep and then I'll drive. Not a good combination. So if you sleep, it's sense gratification, but because you're sleeping so that you enough or even extra so that you don't drive off the road and kill all the devotees, is that for Krishna's pleasure? For satisfying his senses? The devotees are his. So you're taking care of his thing. So in the course of taking care of your senses for Krishna, because you're doing it for Krishna, even though it's some kind of apparent sense gratification, that's also considered to be devotional service, and it's transcendental in the course of performing your service. So you can get a suitcase, and don't worry about it, because you're using it. What else are you using it for except for performing devotional service? You know, all these articles you use. And, a sannyasi even, traditionally, Nowadays, a sannyasi has a laptop and a few other things because, well, they need it to keep in touch with the world and things. But previously, they have like a little water pot and a danda and all these things. And of course, Prabhupada mentions this in the Bhagavatam. He said even a sannyasi with just a couple of things can become attached to them. Generally, it's not the case. Generally, it's more the case someone becomes a householder and then they get a house and it's bigger and bigger and more stuff fills up in it and everything becomes an object of attachment. And but even he said, even a sannyasi could be attached to a few little things. So it's not how many things you have, because we have examples of great kings like Kulashekar, Ambarish Maharaj, who used everything in Krishna's service. I mean, he had everything. But he engaged 24 hours a day, all the things that he had in Krishna's service. So in the idea of Yukta Vairagya, that means it's the same. He's engaging those things that he has for the pleasure of Krishna. And there's an idea of Falgu Vairagya. It means you may renounce things. If you renounce things that could have been used in Krishna's service, this is a false kind of renunciation. In other words, you might have some material items that you could use in Krishna's service, and then you don't use them. Say you have $1 million, and you say, I'll renounce it. I had this penchant before I joined the movement from reading impersonal books that I should eschew all material things. So I was young, and my dad used to give me an allowance. And before I joined the movement, that allowance means kids, you know, in America, their parents give them like a certain amount of money a month so they can buy a few things and stuff. And to prove to God that I was sincere, I used to take the money and throw it away. Until I read Prabhupada's books. And I'd make sure that it was really thrown away, too. Just to prove that I was really sincere, that I didn't want to touch it. But then I read Prabhupada's books and I realized that I should take it all and send it to the temple. So I started putting it in an envelope and sending it to the temple. But before that, I had this idea, money, attachment, bad, so throw it away. And that was false renunciation because it could have been used in Krishna's service. So we have a whole world full of things, as Sri Govinda was pointing out and Rupa was pointing out, that they belong to Krishna. So if we see them in relationship to Krishna and use them in his service, then that's proper kind of renunciation. Wow. That's extraordinary. Could somebody... Okay. but we... Coming to this point of what it means to have this feeling of being fully engaged in devotional service and being in anxiety for it, but feeling full at the same time. This is one thing. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita at one point. This feeling of separation, who brought that up? That there's, Sri Govinda, I think, said that the devotees, they feel separation from Krishna, and in that separation, they feel connection with him, that they're actually connected to him through this separation. It's so intense. It's paradoxical, actually. And this is described by Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Can everyone move up by 6.2 inches, please? There's more space in the front. He said that experience is like... Simultaneously... having poison and nectar poured on you at the same time. Okay, so from a practical point of view, Krishna's saying here that we should be like an ochean. Apuryamanam chalapratishtam samudramapa pravishanti yadvat. And the characteristic of the ocean is, even though it's always being filled up with rivers, it doesn't change. It stays the same. And so from our side, he says that even in our state of perfection, we're material desires are flowing in, but we're not disturbed by them because we're already full. So this experience of fullness is something that is different from material desires and spiritual desires. In other words, spiritual desires may be there, and they're coming in more and more, right? And we feel anxiety to fulfill more of the spiritual desires. In other words, to do more service, and we feel anxiety that it gets done properly. But what is the characteristic of that that's different from material desires? In material desires, no matter how much we fulfill them, if we become a kama-kami, we're desiring to fulfill material desires. That's what it's called, a kama-kami. Even as we fulfill the desires, we still feel empty. And there's an emptiness that can't be filled by material desires. No matter how much we do it, it doesn't fill us up again. It's, as Prahlad Maharaj, he questions the whole process of the material world. Kutrashisha shruti sukham mrigatrishni rupa. And he says it's like a mirage. And as much as you chase it, it retreats and you don't get it. So you never feel an actual satisfaction from it. And there's always a feeling that you're not full even when you get it. For instance, sometimes I had a friend, he always wanted this fancy car he was thinking about. And he finally got it. He saved up enough money and he bought this car. And he told me later that the happiest time he had with the car was the night before he bought it. Because there's so much expectation that his desire was finally going to be fulfilled. He had the money and he went and bought the car. And as soon as he got the car, there was immediate anxiety. It was more than he thought it was going to be because they tacked on a bunch of extra stuff like, you know, the undercoating and the destination charge. And what are you talking about, an extra $2,000? So that put him in anxiety. And then he immediately started thinking, where is he going to park it where no one will scratch it? And, the first scratch, you know, he was immediately in anxiety that his car is ruined. And he was thinking all the time someone might scratch it again. He had to think where he was going to park it. Because if he parked it next to a car, he couldn't pick any parking place because wherever he parked it, somebody might open the door and put a little ding in his car, right? So this is the nature of material desires. Before we get them, there's some sensation that they'll make me happy. And I'm not fulfilled while I'm going for them. And when I get them, I'm also not fulfilled. But with the spiritual desires, as I'm desiring them, they're making me happy. There's a fulfillment in themselves because I'm connected with Krishna through the desire. In fact, the desire to serve Krishna is the same as serving Krishna. In other words, if we develop that desire to serve Krishna, then we're immediately connected to Krishna because we're feeling a desire to serve him. We're feeling his connection. And as we're pursuing that service, we feel connected to Krishna. And as we're doing the service, as we're completing it, we want more. So there's an anxiety, but at the same time, there's a fulfillment. There's a fullness that's not there when there's material desires. So the quality is different when we have material desires and spiritual desires. And the only way, Krishna says earlier in this chapter, to not become a kama-kami, that is, desire to fulfill material desires, is to have a taste for this devotional service. Which verse does he say that in? Yes, thank you very much. Can you give this gentleman the... What's your name? Naveen Krishna Prabhu. Could you please give us the verse?
Two fifty nine.
Yes. So
read the translation.
Okay.
Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains, but seizing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness.
So a higher taste is required, and there's a higher taste when one is performing spiritual activities, there's a fulfillment that he gets. And Prabhupada says in the purport of the verse that we're reading, number 70, that is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present, that he doesn't need it. So there's another example that we can take from the Bhagavatam, in which taking Krishna consciousness is compared to a hungry person eating food. Bhakti parishanu bhavo virakte anyatra traisha trika eka kala prapandya banasidya tasnata sus tushti pushti shud apayonagasam. That when one takes to the process of Krishna consciousness, surrenders to Krishna, then he becomes like a person who's very hungry, but he eats food and he gets nourishment, satisfaction, and eradication of hunger. Hunger goes away. So he feels fulfilled. And similarly, simultaneously, one who's engaged in devotional service, this verse says, Kavi Yogendra says, that he gets bhakti, he gets a direct perception of Krishna for himself, anubhava, and virakti, which means detachment from all other things. So Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami that material life is called chapalasukha. And it's in the characteristic of it is called bhogatyag. We're going from one side to another in material with material desires. First thing, I want to enjoy like anything. This is bhoga. And I try for some kind of material enjoyment. And what is the result of getting material enjoyment? Then after a while, I want to give it up. It's natural because it stagnates at a certain point. People want a certain thing. Like kids, they want toys, right? A lot of kids want toys? Or am I mistaken on that? Do kids like toys or not? I know I liked toys when I was a kid. I used to dream about them. You know, when Christmas was coming, like there was a certain toy I had to have. It's like, I got to have this toy or I'm going to die. And now I don't care anything for them. I don't think about toys anymore. So, you know, at one point in my life, my mind wanted toys, and now I don't want toys. I don't care for them, at least the same toys anyway, that they're not interesting to me. And that can happen over a period of a lifetime. There's a certain thing I want, then I give it up again. Somebody, a newlywed couple, they want their dream house. They go find their dream house. They look all over for it. They save, they plan, they look at it, pictures of it. They finally get their dream house, and then later on, they decide, we don't like this house. This is a place of misery. We've had so many problems here. And then they give the house up, and the next couple comes. They're looking for their dream house. And which house do they buy? Same house. Same house, but there's some expectation of bhoga, happiness. But then the tyag comes. This is it going in pendulum. Bhog, tyag, bhog, tyag. And the happiness in the material world is called chapalasukh. It's flickering happiness. There's no doubt it's happiness, but Vidyapati said it's like the happiness when you're very, very thirsty. Nothing will satisfy you but water, right? When you're very thirsty, someone gives you $5, you say, no, I want a drink of water. I don't want $5. So someone comes, you're in the desert, you're dying of thirst, and someone says, I give you water. And he pulls out an eyedropper. And here's one drop of water. You can't say it's not water, but it won't satisfy your desire. So the happiness of the material world is compared to this one drop. You only get one drop, that's it. It's in theory, it's happiness, but it doesn't satisfy the soul. We're like fish out of water. And a fish, you can give him a little top hat, and you can offer him a watch. How about a gold watch? He just wants to go back in the water. As soon as he gets him back in the water, he's happy. So the material happiness is like that. Where on the other side, spiritual happiness, we can look in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yam Labva Chaparam Labvam. Do you know this verse? Krishna describes the preliminary stage of spiritual happiness. And this is just the preliminary stage where he describes what a person experiences when he gets a little bit of spiritual happiness. Yam Labvam Chaparam Labvam. Look on page 292 and the third shloka down on page 292, Yam labva chaparam labham manyate nadikamtata yasmin stito nadukena gurunapi vichalyate. So this is, we know what chapala sukh is, right? Flickering happy, we've all experienced it before. The little happiness you get from material life, and then later on you don't want it anymore. The thing you wanted goes away. Here's the definition of the beginning stage of spiritual happiness. Krishna says, well, I'll read the whole thing. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material activities by practice of yoga, material mental activities. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Now this yam labha chaparam labha means there's a feeling that there's no greater gain. Whereas in material life, if you're trying to make $1 million and you make $1 million, what's the next thought that comes into your mind? Should have been 2 million. If you get something, you think, oh, why didn't I get the other one too? You know, someone gives you half the inheritance, and they go, oh, if I only was an only child, I would have got the whole thing. This is just natural for the material consciousness that whatever it is, it's not enough. And in spiritual consciousness, he's saying that upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all misery arising from material contact. So there's a sense of fullness in this, in which one's not shaken even in the face of the greatest difficulty. What are some of the greatest difficulties that come to someone in this world? Death is a big deal. It's really a drastic measure, death. I mean, there's a lot of drastic measures you can take, but death is among the highest of them. Radha Madan Mohan Prabhu. Well, we know what happens.
Before that, the misery you live during the lifetime.
Is the mic out of order, or can we pass it back to Madan Mohan?
So the misery which you live, you know, during lifetime before death, I think is worse in the sense that, you know, dealing with the bad clients, you know, bad relatives, you know, money problems, you know, or just dealing with your own drop of water, you know, what you want next. I think it's worse than death. Because I presume when you're dead and you know, you don't know better. And if you're gonna go become a horse or a snake or, you know, whatever your next life is, of course you'll live through that misery again. But at least in the human form, where you have this mind, you're able to think, you can see things, you can perceive things, you can desire things, and then sometimes get it and sometimes don't get it. I think that misery is just beyond death.
You think, I didn't quite catch your argument, that you the miseries that you have in this life?
Maybe I don't have an argument.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that is the comparison I'm missing because I haven't died yet.
But Krishna, yeah, you have died, actually. And we're dying at every minute. We're giving up. We're changing bodies, actually, all the time. Dehino sminyata dehe komaran yavanam jara tata dehantara praptya dhiras tatra namuyati, Krishna says. We're constantly changing our deha. Right now, your deha is changing. It's not a stable thing. It's always changing. So the final change, ukramantam stitam vapi, it means you step out of your body. you may not remember the traumatic experience of leaving your body, but you can experience it by being around other people who are leaving their body. I've been around devotees recently who have left their body. One was a very neophyte devotee, but she told me just before she left, she said, "I never wanted to have to do this again." It's a very traumatic thing, you know, coming up, approaching the point of death and having to forfeit the body that you have now because I have so much investment in it at this point. And normally, I have ideas and plans for the future, how it's all going to work out, and then suddenly being informed that you have to leave it behind. It's more than inconvenient from the material side. It's devastating. I mean, you have to just drop everything. Therefore, this investment on the spiritual side and understanding what is the process of death, you can do through various ways. Shruti, you can hear. You can get understanding of what it means to leave your body from hearing from Shastra. There are a lot of descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, for instance, of those who have left their bodies and then come back and explain what it's like. Like Maharaj Chitraketu, he wanted to have a son. And he was a king. He had to have a son. And he couldn't conceive. And he had many, many wives. So finally a sage gave some benediction. And he said, "You can have whatever you want." And he said, "All I want is a son." And he said, I'll allow you to have a son, but you're going to have a son, and his name is going to be Harshashok, which means he's going to give some happiness and some misery. And he thought, well, that's the same with everybody's children. A little bit of misery mixed in with the happiness. And one of his wives conceived, had a baby boy, and then the other wives became envious, and they poisoned the baby out of envy. And when he found out that the boy had died, he fainted out of agony, misery. And then when he arose again and saw that the baby was still dead, he fainted again. And his wife, same thing. Greatest misery. That's when his guru came back. And this is what's called a teachable moment. We call it a teachable moment, when I'm open to hear something. As normally, my mind, my consciousness is so enraptured with the idea of my material plans that I don't have a moment to think about my spiritual side. So when Narada and Angira Rishi came back, they induced this jiva to come back in the body of the baby and said, "Jiva soul, why did you leave your parents?" And he looked out and said, "Which parents are they? I've had millions of parents. I've been in millions of bodies. I don't know. I don't recognize these parents, sorry, from any of the other parents that I've had before." And Angira Rishi could reveal to his disciple to see what is this process of death, that the soul actually leaves the body. Ukramantam stitam vapi. He steps out of the body and he steps into another situation. You can take from Shastra. So it's very important to understand that, because human life is specifically meant as a preparation for that moment when you're leaving the body. It's a very important juncture. Your hands and legs may not work. Your senses will become ineffectual, but what you have left is your bhava, your feeling, and that's what you've cultivated throughout your lifetime. Yam yam vapi smanan pavam tajayante kalevaram. Tam tam evaite konteya sadatad bhava bhavita. Krishna says, whatever bhava, whatever you're inclined towards at the time of death, because of your cultivation throughout this life, that will qualify you for your next body. And dying is like going to sleep for some time and waking up in another body. If you've ever been put under anesthesia, you know what that feels like. You just... they put the mask on, say, count from 100 down to 1, and you go, 99. And then, you know, you wake up, and they could have amputated both legs, and you wouldn't have known the difference. But you do wake up, and you come into a next situation. So dying is like that. So if you have, if you cultivate the mentality of a dog, a dog's interested in eating, sleeping, mating, defending only, no inquiry into spiritual life. So imagine that you go to sleep as a man and you wake up as a dog. Go to sleep as a man, wake up as a dog. If I offer, if someone offered me right now, I mean, I might say, I don't care. Sometimes, you know, students at the university say something like this. What's the difference if I don't know? Well, I'll offer you right now. We'll put you in anesthesia, and when you wake up, you'll be a dog. How will you like that? This is called ignorance. But there is a progressive path in which coming back to our spiritual position. And that requires spiritual cultivation, and there's the question of spiritual desire. And Krishna is describing it in this verse. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudrama pravishanti yadvat. That just like the ocean is being filled up with material desires, the spiritually trained person doesn't react to them because he understands from Shastra, from personal experience, from understanding through logic, that trying to fulfill those desires only leads to misery. That's an intelligent person, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Someone who doesn't react to all those material desires. And beyond even not reacting to them out of an understanding, out of knowledge, there's a higher position which was described, your name again is Naveen Krishna Prabhu had given us this verse, Param Drishva Nivartate, Vishya Vinivartante Nirharasya Dehina, Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Param Drishva Nivartate. In the course of practicing spiritual life, we will experience a higher taste, and that means that it's not that we're restricting ourselves from material desires. In the beginning, we may, this verse says, in the beginning of yoga, we may restrict ourselves from material desires because I know mode of passion means if I take it, it's like nectar in the beginning and poison at the end. And so intellectually I understand that and I restrain myself and I make a practice of it. But as I become full and I actually experience spiritual life, it's not a question of restraint anymore. It's not even interesting. Like a person who's eaten good food, someone comes and offers him, you know, something rotten, he's not interested anymore. He doesn't, there's not even a question. Param drishva nivartite is experienced a higher taste. And therefore, when one leaves this body, when we have to step out of the body, which we will, and it's a big deal, and we should take it very seriously. It's a big deal to step out of your body because I think I'm my body and I am identifying with the body. But when I have to leave it, it's traumatic unless I've practiced throughout this life. I'll just finish this one point and I'll take your... And that is that when we become spiritually full, it means we have spiritual desires also. And to fulfill those spiritual desires, Krishna gives us a spiritual body. It's not that we attain perfection and then we become unembodied spirits, but actually we have spiritual senses. Sarvopani vinir muktam tapratvena nirmalam. Hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchite. It means all our senses originally are meant to be engaged in the service of Krishna. And mentioned here is that the senses themselves become spiritually enlivened and happy when they're engaged in Krishna's service. So when we die in that situation, Krishna will give us a spiritual body. The example is Narada Muni. When he left his body, his only desire was to serve Krishna. Therefore, he got a spiritual body. This is the perfection of liberation, is to take back one's original swarup, or spiritual body, in the spiritual world in the service of Krishna. And this is possible through the practice of Krishna consciousness. Madan Mohan.
Okay. So first of all, I apologize if I came across as if I was challenging something. I found my point. My point was that as a human, in the human body, as a human being, I haven't faced death. However, your example of your friend who passed away was very helpful because I have seen people, including my own father, you know, who were in ICU and had, you know, terrible, terrible diseases or medical conditions, and nobody could do squat. So it was a very, very humbling experience. So my point was this, that in the human life, I experience whatever miseries I experience in terms of anger, lust, greed, and whole nine yards. And by reading Bhagavad Gita as is, I feel like, to relate it to the real life, is that Krishna was the ultimate Dr. Wayne Dyer. And in this book, and if you can really follow and adopt Krishna consciousness, and if you can raise your spirituality and your consciousness, where you can remain calm, not get too excited, and just accept things the way they are, and stop reacting, I think it's very helpful.
Thank you. Yes, and it is very helpful. Thank you for that. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's the concept of yadrichcha, where Krishna says, yadrichcha labha santushto, that learn to be happy with gain which comes of its own accord. And we can understand something from the Bhagavat in which Narada Muni says that tasyaiva hetu prayateta kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyada talabhyate dukavaranyata sukham, that just as we get miseries in our life without asking for them, don't we? Nobody advertises in Craigslist and says, please come over and beat me with a shoe, you know. We want some pleasant experience, we want some gain, we want some happiness, but nobody's inviting misery. But does misery come anyway? It just comes. It's natural. It comes from different angles. Even when you're not asking for it, when you're not expecting it, it will come. So similarly, Narada says, the good things will also come. On the material side, it's already settled up how much happiness, how much distress you're going to get. On the spiritual side, you can make all gain, because you have unlimited potential for expanding your spiritual life. Material life, doesn't matter what you do to adjust the account, it's going to come back to the same thing. You already bought your ticket. One time in the Philippines, I was with a couple of devotees, and there was some kind of strike going on at the airport, and it was impossible to get on a flight, but somehow or other, because we had really short hair, we went in and we convinced them that we were military and we had to get on the flight, and they let us on. And anyway, we were really tired and it had taken all night to get on the flight and the whole thing. We got on there and the whole first class section was open. So we thought, it's all open. There's no Beckley, nobody on the flight. So we'll just sit down in first class. And so we sat down, and after they took off, they came over and said, get out of here. You guys aren't first class. Go back to the coach section. And similarly, we've bought our ticket in this life, according to Shastra, in a certain cabin. And you're not going to adjust it on the material side. There's no point in trying. I met a couple yesterday on the street down in Santa Cruz. They're intelligent. They're both anthropologists. One of them had just graduated, and the other one was already doing some research or something like that. And I stopped them. They were a little reluctant at first, but I was showing them the Bhagavad Gita and explaining to them that it was a historically valuable book and that all the great scholars have read it, and it's spiritually very powerful. And so they were tolerating me as I was going through the whole process of explaining the book. And then I said, so, we don't sell it, but we take a donation. And the woman agreed. She goes, okay, I'll give a donation. She started reaching in her purse, and as soon as her hand got in her purse, she changed her mind. She said, wait a minute, I'm really broke. I just finished school. I have student loans. I owe money to everybody. He said, I can't give anything. I'll go into negatives. I'm already in negatives. And I said, just give a penny. And she said, that's a negative penny. I said, now, wait a minute. I said, look it, when you're in a hole, you got to understand how to get out of the hole. Now you're in a financial hole. I said, look at this way. A lot of people, they work 2-3 jobs and they try as hard as they can and they never get ahead. And other people, they don't do anything and they're automatically ahead. I said, it's not a matter of a material adjustment. No matter what you do, it's not going to help. I said, but on the spiritual side, did you know that if you give for a spiritual cause, it gives you some spiritual credit and benefit? It'll benefit you spiritually and materially. And she wasn't convinced, but her husband was standing and goes, I've heard of that. And I said, I like this guy. And he goes, I believe in that, you know. He said, let's give him a donation. And she goes, you're kidding me. And he said, he was convinced. Actually, I gave him that, and it made sense. It made sense to him, because if you look around and you analyze, you see everyone's trying to get something. You know, every living entity is going everywhere trying to get something. And on the material side, there's very little to get. The Lord has filled up the universe with all kinds of food and money. But can you get it? I mean, it's all over Silicon Valley. Food, money, everything. How much can you get? You can get what you deserve. You can't get one penny more. You can work harder, but you won't get it. It won't happen. So he understood that, and he said, I'm going to give. And he gave with full conviction. Here's a donation. And he gave with knowledge that this is going for a spiritual cause. You can see, we're out there for a spiritual cause. We're passing out spiritual knowledge. So the answer to life's problems is spiritual knowledge and spiritual practice. It solves everything, actually. It takes us out of the hole. It cures our anxiety. It gives us peace because it's real. The material world is not real. Nasato vidite bhavo, nabhavo vidite sita. Ubayorapi trishtontas tvanayos tatvadarshi bi. Krishna says, line it up and look at it. Take a look at both sides. You can see one thing exists and the other thing doesn't exist. That thing, what doesn't exist, it never existed. It's like a vapor. It's a mirage. It's going on, and you'll keep chasing it, but you won't get anything. The real thing is actually there. It's Brahman. It's permanent. And you can experience it for yourself. It's pratyaksha. You can actually feel it and experience it. So this is a practical thing that we're teaching. And I would argue, and I have argued, and I will go on arguing, that it's the only thing that's actually valuable. Door to door today, we were showing the Bhagavad Gita. And we tell people, we're fundraising, we're distributing these books, and our argument is that there's enough technology in the world. If we stopped now, we'd still have enough technology. The only thing missing is any peace in the world. And the peace comes from spiritual knowledge and show them the Bhagavad Gita. And people know that. They know there's no shanti. There's no peace. But they just don't know where to get it. So Krishna's telling us that you get it from entering deep within the spiritual practice. And you can, one tiny drop. On the one side, I said one eyedropper from material side, it won't satisfy. On the other hand, one drop of Krishna consciousness experience. One taste. Padam drishvadanvartate. If you actually experience it one time, Bhakti Vinod Upadesh, Ekbarnam Rashe Matore. He says, experience the ras, that flavor of it one time. You'll never forget it, Bhagavatam says. Someone who takes to Krishna consciousness, they've experienced it once, somehow or other, they become distracted and they go away. They can try everything. Take all the material pleasure that you get from the senses and put it in one syringe and then inject it. And it won't satisfy you compared to the one drop of taste you got from chanting Hare Krishna. Like this Harinam Sankirtan we had the other night. We had this Harinam Sankirtan the other night in Palo Alto. I tell you, you just stand there in the middle of the Harinam. The devotees are all chanting and playing drums and singing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And I don't know what it is, but there's something so moving about that, that it's life-changing. And all you have to do is be in the middle of it. You stand there and you look at the devotees and they start dancing. If Rakshit Jariwala wasn't out of town, he would have been dancing like a madman in the middle of the... Because I've seen it before. It's the barometer when the kirtan's going up, going up, going up. The taste is coming and the devotees look around and they hear the holy name. They actually experience it for themselves. And you look over and Rakshit's dancing. He's off the ground. And then everyone goes off the ground. And they can't stop it. This is joy, actually. This is a point in time. Everyone's chanting at the same time. They're broadcasting. They know they're doing the right thing. They've heard it from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're experiencing that they're doing the right thing. They're hearing something that they've never heard before that's filling their soul. And all they can do to express it is to dance and put their arms in the air like this and jump up. That's happiness. But sitting behind a cubicle, waiting for the pink slip to come, that's not happiness. You know, wondering, you know, if I'm going to make it next month, it's not happiness. But if I enter into this ocean of spiritual happiness that comes from Harinam, it actually comes from the holy name of Krishna, then I'll be happy. I can fill my life. Do more Hari Nam. Chant Hare Krishna more. If you want to know that secret to life's happiness, you chant God's name. It's stated in every shastra for the Kali Yuga. If you just repeat the name of God, that's all you have to do. You don't have to go to the Himalaya, thank goodness. You don't have to, you know, do meditation. All you have to do is repeat God's name. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevala, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatun. In fact, it's giving us permission. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. Just making it simple. Concentrate here and you'll be happy. So this is the way to be an ocean that is being filled with rivers and always remains still. If you take shelter of the holy name, as soon as material desires enter into our heart or our mind, what do? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Gopremanande. So now we're going to have a Harinam Sankirtan.